Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. I hear from so many of you who are just really looking for help, for new tools to help us walk through this journey that it can include trauma and just some desperate seasons in life. So I want to share with you today some new fascinating research and new treatment method from a sweet friend of ours, Dr. Bob Montes. I think you'll really be encouraged by what he will share with us today. Dr. Bob, I know you are passionate, because I've heard your heart. I know you love the Lord. You love His Word. But to see families and children heal from the effects of trauma. And I've been in your office. I see the thick books. You're like, Lynette, I study these all the time. You've spent your life studying brain development and helping people get to a place of healing. So will you just share with our sweet families, our listeners, how you stepped into the field of neurofeedback?
Oh, wow. That's a great question, because I knew about it from years ago when I was getting training back in the 90s, the early 90s, late 80s. And it was really archaic looking, and so it kind of scared me away, because it's
different.
It really is. I mean, you put something on your head, and it reads your brain waves, and then the person is supposed to sit there. All these wires were everywhere, and I just thought, I don't know if I could do that. But then years later, because of the development of, you know, technology today and the computer age and all of that stuff getting better and better, that by the time, you know, the 2000s came around, I started getting really interested in it again. And then I met somebody who was using it, and we started together a little bit, and from there it just took off.
Wow. Yeah. So would you just take a minute and just talk with me and just kind of explain to us, kind of in layman terms, you know, what is, you call it new brain at your practice,
yes,
right?
Yes, we do. Yeah. So new brain is a combination of different technologies that are helpful for repairing the brain for issues that are there. So it works really through brainwave issues. So brainwaves are the electricity of the brain. Mm-hmm. So if you think about, like, you know, that the brain operates, it's an organ that's made of tissue, and then it has blood flow going through it, so that provides nutrition, and then there's chemicals in the brain, and then the other part is the electricity of the brain.
Yeah.
And so electricity is the brain has enough electricity in it to literally light a 30-watt light bulb.
Wow.
But it has the processing capacity of a hydroelectric plant that
Goodness.
Could light a city. I mean, that's the processing power that it has. So it takes very little effort to make a change in the brain in the right direction. And so our job with what we do there is we train the brain through the electrical channels to change where it is from a, call it a dysfunctional place, to, you know, a better place. We'll bring it closer to what would be a balanced and normal way of functioning.
Oh, I get it. So I sort of get it. But so things that would cause dysfunction in the brain, say if we're talking about kids from trauma or adults who had, you know, a tough background or who were neglected, grief, abuse, are those things that we see that this helps?
Yeah, those are the very things, you know, because the things that change the brain could be something physical, like somebody could have a car accident and have a traumatic brain injury.
Right.
Or it could be a concussion from a sports injury. So we help people with those direct hits to the brain that actually cause a physical change in the brain. But other things that cause those same physical changes are traumatic events. So people with PTSD or high levels of anxiety, maybe they have gone through the death of a loved one or something. All of those are effects on the brain, and they create a trauma for the brain, and the brain then just gets out of balance with that trauma. So, for example, like the areas of the brain that really get out of sorts would be the deep part of the brain, the fight or flight mechanism. So, you know, you'll have a child in the home, and it could be an adult too. It could be an older child or an adult that may have an event that happens. And that event then sears its way into the brain, into the deep parts of the brain.
That's fascinating.
So we have to, we go through a protective measure. We have to, we become hypervigilant maybe. And in that process, the brain locks into that. It says, okay, I'm going to pay attention right now to danger. Now that danger may not be danger to you and me. It could be, say, for example, a female. If you're raised in an orphanage and the only, and maybe there was someone who was destructive in that orphanage home, lots of abuse from somebody, and it happens to be a female. Well, then that would be a difficult person to trust at that point. And so the individual is just reacting to a stress event in a normal way. And so what we do with neurofeedback is we go directly to those areas and we first measure it, we look at it, and if we see that the brain is out of sorts in that area, then we go directly to that place using our technology and we train that area to come down.
It's just amazing to me. And this is a non-medical approach, right?
Yes, it is. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we wanted it in our office. There are too many families coming in, and they felt a little bit, unsure about putting their child on heavy medications at an early age, especially. So I felt the same need as they did to find a way to help, and that's where neurofeedback came in. It's a safe technology. It doesn't put anything into the brain. I think people think, oh gosh, is this like electroconvulsive therapy where you're shooting electricity through the brain? And it's not that. It's actually training the brain. So it reads what the brain is doing, and then it trains the brain to do something that we want it to do.
So how does that work? So we bring someone in, just the first steps. Mm-hmm. We bring in, maybe we have a young adult, a teen, a little child in our home that has been through the things you described earlier, neglect, grief, heavy loss. And we just see that their protection mode, as you said, the wall they put around themselves is fright, flight, or fight. And that's how they respond, maybe, like you said, to a female. Or if they see dinner dishes being cleared, they think that's it for a week. Or, and that's not, So they're responding that way. And so we bring them to you, or we get them into neurofeedback. How does that process begin? Because you said, I know I was a little skeptical at first when I first heard about it. But then as we get more comfortable with technology, you realize this can be a beautiful tool.
It really is. So the first step for people is to come in for what we call the diagnostic intake, and just to find out what's going on. And once we get a good understanding of what has happened with the child, and we notice some of the behavior patterns, and some of it may be something as simple as, we have to tell them 4 or 5 times to do the same thing, and they don't seem to really hear us or listen, or I feel like they're ignoring us or something. So that could be an attention problem where, the frontal lobe isn't activated enough to really pay attention. But the basic thing we do is after we get a good understanding of what's going on with the child, then we take the second step and provide a brain map for that child. A brain map is simply an opportunity for them to sit down and for us to read the brain. So in its normal state, the brain is giving off electricity. Whether you're asleep or awake, the brain is constantly producing electricity. Now, it's normal for the brain to produce certain types of electricity in a sleep state, and then it's abnormal for that brain to produce the same brain waves in a waking state. So we're watching for things like that. We're also watching for the location in the brain where the issues are.
Wow.
So we have very advanced technology that goes deep into the brain and can identify even down to the brainstem and the cerebellum what's going on with that child. Once we see dysregulation in an area, then we produce a protocol that will work to fix that area in the brain. And we then set the child up for the next phase. Phase 2 is now training the brain, or teaching the brain to do something better than it was doing before.
Oh, so retraining the brain. So you map the brain, and then you begin a retraining process. Mm-hmm. But it's not really, it's not a scary thing, is it? The process is very natural for kids.
Yeah, very much so. In fact, if your child loves video games,
right? Who doesn't, right?
Yeah. Then they'll play a video game with their brain.
Really?
Essentially, yeah. It's the cap is placed on the head. The very same cap that's used for evaluating the brain is then placed on their head again. Sensors are all in the cap, and the sensors are reading brain waves. And our version of neurofeedback is the most advanced version because we use a 19-channel training program, whereas most neurofeedback programs use maybe a 2 or 4-channel training, meaning that it only puts sensors in 2 or 4 areas on the scalp, whereas we have 19 areas covered. And when we get there, we then set up the video game for the child, and we teach the child how to play the video game. Essentially, if they do, if the bird flies through a target, or if they can knock all these blocks off at a carnival that they're, quote, attending, then they will score points, and mm-hmm. those points that are scored in the direction that we want. Is then rewarding the brain appropriately. So the more rewards the brain gets in an indicated direction, the more healing takes place for the brain in that area.
That is incredible to me. It really is. So you can't just sit at home and play video games and get the same healing.
Oh, no. You have to. There's no hand controls for the children.
Oh.
It's completely done with their brain. So they have to focus, maintain focus, and as they're the better they focus, the better they play the game.
So it's a reward system in the brain.
Yes, it is.
Wow.
It's activating that. And once the brain learns that it gets rewarded for something, then it will seek to return to that. We have a technician in the room that watches the child playing, or adult. This is for all ages,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
We have plenty of probably just as many adults as children
is
come
right?
in to us. Yes. Just for things like, they can't manage their anger, or maybe there's addiction problems, or maybe there's issues related to anxiety and mm-hmm. stress, and they can't find a way to regulate, and so they come in for that. So we get a lot of adults. But with respect to what is done in that moment, while they're playing this, while they're watching a video game, and controlling it with their brains, every time their focus gets sharper, a technician is behind them saying, okay, let's make it even harder for that person. And that sort of like adjustment that technician makes as the child gets better and better, and then they feel like they come back sometimes to square one, because they're like, hey, yesterday I got 5,000 points.
Yeah.
How come I'm having a harder time this time? And it's because they've changed the threshold for reward, and the child has to work harder. And that just reaffirms their changes. So we want those changes to be permanent. And we can only do that by making it harder and harder for that child. But it's still fun. They're still having a good time doing it. And in the end, the changes really are magnificent.
Wow. So is the child, say a younger child or someone with some anxiety, do they struggle with putting the cap on? Or is it kind of become they just get comfortable with it? Does it take some adjustment?
At first, I think the first thing that happens with most people is we have to make sure we have the right size cap.
Yeah.
And there's various sizes that we use. So we've had our problems sometimes where we measure and this is the perfect size cap. And for that child, they want the next size up. And that's no problem.
Because, yeah, because I can think of someone with autism or something, it might be a little...
Yes.
Hard for them to do that, to feel like they're enclosed or somebody is just holding them down with just this cap on.
Yeah, yeah. The fact is that for a lot of them, they just get used to it. I mean,
yeah.
After the first one
right.
or two times, they just...
So this is a process. So you come back for like weekly or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually because the brain has taken so long to go... in the negative direction, it takes some time to reverse fields and get the brain going in the correct direction. So we have had people come in for 10 to 20 sessions where we feel, and that's mostly for our anxious kids, that seems to respond pretty quickly. But for those who've had more extensive trauma, then we find it a little bit more difficult because we're getting to areas of the brain that are still mysterious to even the neuroscientists today. We know that parts of the brain have to do with things like trust or sense of self, or we know there's a deeper part of the brain that has to do with our even our emotions and our love feelings and so forth. And those areas are still somewhat mysterious. But for those children who may have trust issues, for example, there's going to be some time needed to kind of move that child from, you know, like, you know, from where they were to finally getting to a place where now the body doesn't react so quickly to an event outside of themselves. Wow. So think of it more like, you know, whenever we form habits, those habits are staying with us because we don't really have to do it consciously. But when those unconscious habits mm-hmm. are now being addressed, it takes time to undo those because, you know, we just have snap reactions to the world around us.
Yeah, that's our comfort zone, you know, our self, just, you know, the things we do that just alienate us from others or, it's, you know, we know when a person experiences trauma, though, like you said, it changes the brain chemistry.
It does.
And these physical changes just really for parents can, they just baffle us. They lead to challenging behaviors.
Yes, yeah. And that trust, again, and also attachment, which is some of, you know, what most parents have to deal with adopted kids. And part of that has to do with just, you know, the environment and how long they were in the other environment before coming to the parent. Mm-hmm. For example, like in the very early phases of development, a child has mostly delta waves or slow wave activity going on between like 1 to 3 years of age. And it makes sense because, you know, they sleep a lot, right? And delta waves have to do with sleep. They're very slow oscillating waves for sleep. The theta wave is the meditative wave, and that's somewhere between the ages of 3 up to age 7. And theta waves are meditative waves, and meditative waves are our subconscious kind of wave activity. And you can pretty much say anything to that child, and they'll believe it.
Yeah.
And what's so unfortunate sometimes is these children are in environments where they're being told things, you know, you're stupid or you're not, you know, you're not well or something's wrong with you or I hate you or just awful things that they may be hearing. And then they tend to place that deep inside of themselves.
Yeah, they internalize it. Yeah.
Very much so. And so those that age range is very special because that's the time we really should be telling our kids, you know, that, you know, God made you beautiful. God loves you and you're lovable. But unfortunately, the reverse is there. So to undo that sometimes takes some time. You have to get into that area of the brain that tends to hold on to habits and habitual ways of thinking.
Wow.
And when you can reach those areas with, you know, this type of technology, it may take more time than, you know, than one would imagine, but it could be 20 to 40. Sometimes we've had 40 to 60 sessions with kids.
Yeah, it's a commitment. It really is.
Yeah, it is.
Man, it's such a healing tool. But, you know, I hear from so many families who are just weary. I know how they feel. They're just weary. They've been from doctor to doctor, but they aren't getting the compassion, the understanding, the support they so desperately need. And this, to me, this is just such a bright beacon of hope for families.
Well, that sounds, it can be. One of the things that we do at our office is we don't just leave it at just neurofeedback.
Yeah.
I mean, we do training, we do therapy, we have Christy, my wife there, who's has her doctorate in naturopathy, so she offers her input, and so we come from it from a nutritional point of view, a psychological point of view, a theological point of view, and then we come at it from a neurological point of view. And with the combination of those, we can really see some changes happen in people rapidly, which we're so blessed to see day in and day out. So if we can, I think it's never one size fits all,
yeah.
if you will.
But we're all so different. Yeah,
yeah, but by combining those treatments, we seem to do really well with folks.
Well, and it's tools we can take into our home because you're really showing us a different way to parent here, too.
I think it boils down to that, too, because I think when I remember a family coming in and they were frustrated with their child, and this wasn't an adoptive case, but they were frustrated. And when we did a brain map and I showed the brain map to them, you could see that the frontal lobe was just not activated as well as kids his own age. Now, keep in mind that what we do is we take a map of a person and we compare it to the top databases that are around for EEG, and it creates the bell-shaped curve, and that there's normal and then there's, you know, outside mm-hmm. of normal, either too high or too low. And what we discovered was this very low functioning region of the brain that has to do with executive function and attention
yes.
and things like that. You know, what I'm
yes.
saying? That's my problem
all
too.
All parents, yeah,
praise
everyone.
Lord, I have the machine in my office. I get to use it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. So then when when I showed it to them, I mean, it was a little bit of a grieving time. Like, oh, we were just so hard on him. We shouldn't have been so hard. But it's like,
yeah.
well, this is why we have this technology. We want to see what's going on in the brain. And then when we start to affect it in the positive direction, and then things just seem to turn out a little better.
So it is a physical, I mean, there's something going on physically. It's not that my child's just choosing to be difficult.
Yes, yes. yeah, and the problem is with that is that there is, there's a stylistic approach as well. So the child is, reacting to maybe tone of voice and things like that. So it's possible that what's really affecting the child is not that they are, being resistant or oppositional per se, but this tone sets off a series of electrical signals in the brain that says, I'm in fight or flight. If I cooperate right now, it's going to be bad. Now, you would think, why in the world would cooperating right now be bad? Well, somehow the signals were crossed in their brain to indicate to them that, no, if you cooperate, that could mean something not so good. And so they may just respond that way. Now,
that's baffling for parents.
It is, because nobody quite gets that. It's like, hey, it always goes well if you just, follow directions. But for them, it may not be so easy mm-hmm. to do that.
That's right. And they're just, it's really a wall of protection, like we said earlier, isn't it?
Yeah. And we don't know why. We don't know why they chose this way to be their protective route as opposed to someone else. But, it looks the same on the outside. It looks like oppositional behavior. It's clear cut. They're just not listening. They need, more discipline or punishment. But that route isn't
that
really
work.
Effective.
No, it's not effective at all. No, been there, tried that.
Yeah.
It's not effective. So this is all just really such a blessing, in our area. I know everyone I send your way are like, oh, thanks so much, because it just seems to be a missing piece to, like you said, it's a holistic approach for sure, but just to help us, in this journey. So for families listening outside our area, how might they go about seeking this treatment in their community?
Yeah, there's, there are a number of places that have this, but I would say that what you want to do is you want to Google it. I would say you would Google neurofeedback, but you would want to be specific about the type of neurofeedback you're looking for. So I would be looking for anything that has the 19-channel neurofeedback approach. That's because with 19 sensors on the scalp, it's actually reading the deep areas of the brain. Those little sensors act like little tiny cell towers, and they can triangulate the deep areas of the brain, whereas surface training isn't really as effective. Not saying it's not effective at all. It's just, the 19 channel seems to be a better thing for us. So they would look it up, and they would make sure they're specific to that type, and then they would, I would just suggest contacting, directly. But, they could always call my office too. And, there's a database that we have. There's a number of people on a listserv that is personal to me, and I can always get on that ask, you know, where's neurofeedback in New Mexico, or where's a good spot for, you know, Utah or something, and we'll find a spot.
Yeah, that's so helpful. You know, Dr. Bob, I know a lot of kids who come into foster care, that are never reunified with their families, they're adopted, or kids who come out of institutions. I've noticed that as they get older, you really begin to see some signs of PTSD, almost like we think it was just for military, but it's not. It's difficult to deal with, but have you seen this help with those kind of situations?
Oh, yeah, tremendously. PTSD is that fight or flight place in the brain, so it's accompanied with other features like flashbacks, and it doesn't take much to stimulate a flashback sometimes for certain people.
Yeah.
I mean, they could be in a grocery store, and it doesn't even have to be something they see visibly. It could be a thought, and that loud thought will generate the consecutive reactions in the brain, and suddenly they're feeling, you know, like they need to get out of here or something like that. So in a fight or flight situation, it's normal for someone to want to defend themselves and protect themselves. So in certain cases that we have dealt with before, we have identified the area of the brain that's responding, and it's usually the deep area of the brain. It's a region called the limbic system, which is, you know, the primary fight or flight area. And by working that area where they're, you know, as I said, playing the video game with really something very as placid as that by the end of it, they don't understand or recall, what has caused this, they don't understand or recall the events anymore. Or they may recall the event, but they don't feel the
feelings. They're not as threatening?
They don't feel as threatening. Uh-huh. They're not associating that negative feeling with it. It's a great tool for that. And it just reminds me of, you know, a case that we did work with where there was a child who was dealing with anxiety and stress. I wouldn't necessarily go as far as to say it's a full-blown PTSD reaction, but the anxiety was so high and the resistance that was there for just normal things created conflict between the parent
and there's
the
no
child.
Attachment. You just can't attach in that situation.
Yeah. So what we did, several things. One thing is we do EMDR at our office, which is a type of therapy for trauma. So it's a very effective thing. Now, we can do it with the machine as well. So we have a tool that we use where we have the brain identified. First, we identify where the area of dysregulation in the brain is, and then we put a sensor. We make sure the sensor is lit up for that area, and then we can actually do therapy with them. We can talk to them and watch on a screen when that child is ready to respond. So it's a type of therapy called alpha theta training, and it's useful because that's the area where the brain is most responsive to someone telling it something better. Okay, so it's like a place where we're between like wakefulness and sleep. We're right in that zone, and then that's when we can minister the truth to that person in that moment. It's a really fascinating area of
ministering
the brain.
Truth. Yeah, and just helping them get their arms around it to accept that truth.
And we have had I've had occasions where I've had the parent in the room with the child. And by holding the child and then working through those areas of the brain first, then there's a connection, a bonding that can happen with the child, which is pretty neat. So it's called alpha theta training in particular, but it's really powerful. If that's the case, you know, with kids that are really having trouble, There needs to be a process first. There needs to be, if there's a negative pattern that's been established with the parent and the child, then we have to break up those patterns first and maybe discuss that to some extent. And then when there's an open door at some point, then, you know, and you start to see the child begin trusting the parent a little bit more, then something like an alpha theta training module could work really well for that child in that moment.
Wow. Yeah. So many helps for us out there now.
It's amazing.
I know.
I'm amazed by it. Every time I get new training, it's another level of fascination for me because there's research going on all the time.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I just want to thank you for opening this new window of understanding for us today. And just, you know, I've just learned volumes for you. I continue to do this podcast, Dr. Bob, because families feel alone and isolated on this journey. And mm-hmm. someone like you who comes along and says, look, I care, I'll listen, and I want to help walk you through this. Man, what a gift the Lord's given you in that.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. I'm always so grateful when the Lord crosses my path with someone who truly cares like you do. And because we can just feel like we're drowning in despair because we love the child so much and we know God has a calling on their life.
Yeah.
And honestly, the enemy just wants to destroy them.
It is so true. And I think those are the thoughts that the children have regarding, you know, coming into a new home, especially if they've come from a distance or maybe it could even be a local adoption or something. But the ideas that are circulating in the minds of these children for, you know, people in general, and we talked about the trust factor and those kinds of things. And so they have no reference, it seems, for care, love, trust.
No, none.
And
yeah.
So to develop that takes some time. Those of us who are, you know, really seeking to, first of all, bring a safe, biblical way of raising the child in terms of like making sure that they are, walking, you know, with the Lord, being around kids that are caring and loving and so forth and guiding them through the mm-hmm. process of disappointment and things like that as well, and always giving them that safe place to come home to. I think that's where things begin to change.
Oh. Yeah, I totally agree. I really do. Well, you're not only listening and showing up, but you're helping families to a place of healing. And we're just so grateful for your time today and sharing this. And we'll add a lot of information about your practice in the show notes. And we do appreciate you taking calls from our sweet families outside of this area to help them and guide them in this. So thank you, Dr. Bob, for joining us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate you joining me today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, which is a ministry of Sin Relief. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, and you can find more information and subscribe at sinrelief.org. Thanks for listening and making us a part of your adoption and foster care journey.
The world tells us our differences should divide us, but the gospel, it has a different story. Our mission, our calling, His command, is a mission that unites every Christ follower in a way that stands out, a way that doesn't make sense to the world. Join us June 13th and 14th at Send Conference to be refreshed and celebrate the church together on mission. A free event hosted by the International Mission Board and North American Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. Learn more at sendconference.com.